Blog Talk Radio.
He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama. Together you got smooth drama.
Hey, welcome to Smooth Drama, your host Dick Hugger. You know, tonight we got an extra special show for you tonight. First, going to be co-hosted by my main man, Blackfield, because, you know, my girl Butter, she's still recovering. And we want all y'all to wish her well. You know, y'all want to throw some spam mail at her. Thong pictures. y'all can hit up butter@smoothdrama.com. Wish her well. Also, as always, we try to get good guests tonight. It's basketball night. We got Mark Wade, former UNLV point guard, owner of the best assist season ever in NCAA history, owns the record for most assists in the season, also the most assists in the final four games. So we're going to talk some NCAA basketball since, you know, we kind of got March Madness coming right around the corner here, and we're going to talk about one of my favorite subjects, basketball. And if you're down to hear about that, or you want to ask Mr. Wade some questions, give us a call, 646-929-2037. Once again, you know, we encourage your calls about anything, basically. You can hit us up at 646-929-2037. And, as always, you can hit us up by email if you too shy to call. Email, of course, is smoothdrama@smoothdrama.com. Always. And we're working on a first edition of the Smooth Drama newsletter. So if there's anything you would like to contribute, any comments, any subjects you want to write, are currently taking submissions for the newsletter, and you can email me, dick@smoothdrama.com, taking off submission. All subjects are welcome, and we're going to be putting that out here in a little bit, debuting. It's going to be fabulous. Got some good stuff coming. And y'all know we do different events, whatnot, and try to get out and meet with people, whatever. So, you want to keep up with us from your mobile device, you can hit us, text the word Smooth Drama to the number 41411. Once again, you can text the word Smooth Drama to the number 41411, and it keeps you up to date with what we're doing and what we got happening here as far as events and what's going on with me and Butter and Smooth Drama in general. Now that we got all that out the way, you know, there's some stuff that's trouble. I mean, you know, we're on the internet, whatever, and people, you know, prefer the internet, and it's a way for people to get in contact with one another. Obviously, easier, you reach out and touch each other in the world and whatnot. But there's this story from South Korea that has just, I don't know. As you know, I love the internet, obviously. You know, I have internet. We have an internet talk show here. But I also like real people and seeing people and touching people and, you know, being able to mix with live people. But there's this couple, a South Korean couple, who starved their kid to death while they were raising their virtual child online. You know, what happened is the couple fed their 3-month-old daughter once a day between marathon stretches in a local internet cafe where they were raising a virtual child in a fantasy role-playing game, Prius Online. I guess Prius Online is a 3D game in which players nurture an online companion, Anima, who is a young girl with mysterious power who grows and increases her skills. The police didn't identify these two assholes, 41-year-old father and 25-year-old mother, who live in Suwon, which is, a suburb south of Seoul. But, get this, the father had the nerve to apologize. He said, "I wish that she hadn't got sick and that she will live well in heaven forever. And as the father, I am sorry." Now, I don't know about anybody else, but the fact that they let their live child die to keep up with a virtual child is really, really wrong on a whole lot of levels. And I believe we have my man Black Steel.
Yo, what's up?
What's up, man? How you living?
I'm on the show with my man Dick Hugger. What's up, Dick?
I'm good. I'm sitting up here. I don't know if you heard about the story about the South Korean couple who their real daughter died because they were spending a lot of their time in the internet cafe raising a virtual child.
Nah, I didn't hear about that. Speak on it.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I was talking about it here. 41-year-old father, 25-year-old mother. They live in Suwon in Seoul, South Korea. And basically, the mother and father, who had, I guess, lost their jobs, they let her go. They fed her once a day, and she eventually died.
To nurture
a online virtual child.
I can't do it anymore. Oh, dang. Yeah, that's not right.
Yeah. Really, really out there. It make me wonder about the judgment of folks sometimes. I'll tell you, boys and girls, don't try that at home. I know everybody loves video games. That's one of the reasons why I don't really care too much for them, because I don't want to get caught up in a virtual world when I'm still living in the real world. I understand. You know, that, hey, sometimes you need escape, but as Flavor Flav once said, you can't stop reality from being real.
No doubt.
Speaking of judgment, judgment on people, there's the guy, Rodney Alcala, who was a serial killer. And, you know, they did background on him. And I guess this guy won on the dating game way back in 1978. He was the winner on the dating game, which is kind of funny. I don't know if that's an indictment on people, like a woman chose a serial killer. Out of, you know, you watch the dating game, right? It's the old, you know, where the three men behind the curtain or whatever. Well, you know, this guy, Rodney Alcala, who's a serial killer, he killed like a few women, raped 8-year-old girl. You know, he killed a few other women. I guess he won on the dating game. Now, I bring this up because, you know, we just got through talking to people who would rather raise a virtual kid than the real kid. And then we're talking about real people who, and it's not, I guess it's not an indictment because you can't tell whether or not somebody is a serial killer, I guess, but it just speaks to our society, I think, our civilization in general, that a killer can win on the dating game. You think that wouldn't happen. Yeah. But maybe it's me. I could
be
wrong.
Well, my question is, how to get on there in the first place?
Well, I mean, I didn't know the criteria for getting on the dating game, but I'm assuming you just, you know, say you're single, and they run you, they check your profile, and, you know, I guess, and producers pick you, say, oh, he's cute, whatever, and that'll be it. And that's how you got on the show. Because maybe he wasn't a serial killer then, maybe he was. We'll never know, and I don't really care. I hope somebody beats him to death when he gets to jail. And so, did I say beat him to death when he gets to jail? Yeah, I guess I did. Anyway, people like that, I wish the worst for, obviously, because they don't deserve any good treatment at all, for obvious reasons. But I'm talking about gloomy stuff here. I don't want to talk about gloomy stuff. I did read something, and I'm gonna ask your opinion. You know how we talk. You know how people eat different kinds of foods all over the world. Over in China, they're considering not eating dog and cat because they're saying that they will reach a new level of civilization. Now, here's my thing. I don't see how you're more civilized not eating dogs and cats than cows and chickens. Where I'm coming from? You know, because they're saying that the Chinese are uncivilized because they eat dogs and cats. And I'm like, what's the difference? Food is food. Do you have an opinion on whether or not you would like to eat dog or cat?
Basically, I do. I'm not going to eat no dog or no cat. Number one, you know, the people, you know, the animal rights activists will be mad because they find out that, you know, a brother's eating off a dog and some cat. And then, you know, they might come out in front of my job, in front of my crib, the whole time saying that I'm, you know, I'm inhumane. But I guess over there, the animals run the street anyway. So I guess if over there they pick a dog or a cat up, you know, then they are straight and ain't got no home, I guess it's all good. But over here, just give me some chicken and I'm good.
Yeah, I'm with that. Now, but what I'm saying is, if I'm from, I mean, because it's like basically people saying from somewhere else, you know, stereotyping, but, you know, black folks like chicken. If somebody was to say, you know what, eating chicken is inhumane and uncivilized, are we going to stop eating chicken because somebody over in China said, you know what, that ain't a pet? And y'all, there's something wrong with y'all. People protesting. Will people protesting stop you from going to Popeye's Chicken?
I don't think so.
I'm saying so. I mean, because it could be, you know, Popeye's dog or Popeye's cat over there, and it could be some damn good ass dog or cat. We don't know. So I'm just asking, you know. Is that something, I mean, you think it's fair or unfair? That's all. And this is not just generally to you. I'm just talking about just to the listeners in general. You think it's right or wrong that somebody can tell you what you should eat and what you eat makes you uncivilized, unless you're eating people. And then obviously, I'm like, yeah, y'all got some damn issues. But, you know, there's a difference between eating people and just eating animals, because we eat animals all the time. At least I know I do. I know about anybody else. I love my chicken from Popeyes and KFC and chicken sandwiches and damn near anything that I'm down for it.
No doubt. I'm also down with the chicken.
Yeah. I just don't eat chicken head.
Yeah, mean it.
Identification break, and then we gonna call my man Mark Wade.
Cause I smooth drummer.
Yes, sir.
Slick smooth drummer.
Yes, sir.
Slick smooth drummer.
Yes, sir.
Slick smooth drummer.
Yes, sir.
Listen here, man. It's your boy, Cam Wee. I'm just acting a fool, acting a fool, acting a fool. With my man, DH. Y'all know him as. And Butter Butter Pecan. Yes, sir. Chosen.
All right. Welcome back to Smooth Drama with your host, Dick Tucker, and my main man, Black Steel, guest hosting. Right now, we about to call up my man, Mark Wade.
You've reached Mark at Free to Be Me Sports. Please leave your name, number, and a brief message. I'll get back to you as soon as possible.
Hold on. Y'all try that one. Strike one.
Hello.
Hello, Mark.
What's up, friend?
Mr. Wade.
How you doing?
I'm all right. How you doing, sir? Welcome to Smooth Drama.
It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's our pleasure, definitely. For those of y'all don't know, we on the phone with Mark Wade, former UNLV point guard, owner of the most assists ever in the season, 1986-87. Also, you know, he owns the most assists in the Final Four in the game that I really hated you in, because, you know, I'm an Indiana Hoosier fan, and so you had me sit there for a minute.
I'm a Hoosier fan now, too, Fred.
You're a Hoosier fan now, too. They kind of terrible right now.
Yeah, after that beatdown, you got to switch over.
Hey, that wasn't no beatdown. Y'all was in the game. And looking, honestly, looking at the bracket, y'all was the only team that scared me in Indiana's bracket. So, but anyway, how you doing, man? What you been up to?
At the present time, just trying to mess around with kids and trying to teach them how to play the game the right way. Doing two things. I have a travel basketball team, AAU basketball team called California Supreme Elite, and I have my own organization called Free to Be Me Sports. And basically just trying to mentor and teach kids the right to play the game the right way.
Okay. All right. And so where are you based out of now?
Can you repeat that, Greg?
Could you repeat that?
Can you repeat that?
Hello?
Hello?
Yeah.
That was a bad connection.
Yeah. Can you hear us now?
Yeah, I got you. Yeah.
Okay. Well, no, what I was saying is what now?
Based up in Los Angeles.
All right, based out of Los Angeles. Now, before we get into really what you get into now, I want to ask you, you know, playing at UNLV back in those days, and most of us knew UNLV as, you know, the out there school. How was it playing for Tart and at UNLV? What was the environment like?
I'll tell you, the misconception is that we were a bunch of wild guys, criminals, and thugs. And at the end of the day, when I look back on it, it was still probably some of the most disciplined practices and disciplined games I've ever been a part of. People, unless you came to practice, you wouldn't know how hard we worked the game. And as I've gotten older, I guess the term I would use is organized chaos, is what Tark tried to breed in us. And it was actually fun to play, but people have no clue about the work we put in practice prior to the games.
As somebody who loves playing basketball and, you know, watching y'all, I mean, the appeal to UNLV and Tark's teams in general was because y'all played, you know, street ball. You played the man-to-man straight-up defense. And, you know, y'all foul and run a gun and it was in your face. I mean, we loved it.
And honestly, it was fun to play, but it was more structured than people would ever have a clue. And again, because even on my team, as you got to the capture team with Larry Johnson, I think they had better athletes. But overall, I think our team might have been better. And the thing was, we had guys who, like myself, who didn't shoot, another guy, Jarvis Bazenight, who didn't shoot. So we all knew our role, so it was a lot more organized than it looked when you watched it.
Right. Oh, no, because definitely if you look in college basketball today, you can see there was a lot of people who were taking that foul. I mean, like, I look at Calipari down in Kentucky. That's Tarkanian coaching style. Basically, you played hard defense, press up man-to-man. And, you know, you have a structured passing game, but, you know, basically, so long as you're not doing nothing stupid, offensively, you have, I mean, and that's how we've seen UNLV. And I thought UNLV played beautiful basketball.
Yeah, and that's the sad part for me, is watching most of the basketball now. Teams like Kentucky and I don't know if any other team that really plays that kind of hectic pace. And the hard part is, it's hard to teach and it's hard to practice against it. And what makes it difficult to play against is, you can't simulate the speed in practice.
Right.
And that's the fun part about it. I think a lot of college coaches, if you're watching a lot of the games, they surrender teaching and making the kids work that hard specifically.
Well, I know for me, straight up, I will never be a Syracuse fan because they are zoned and have been zoned forever and a day. I can't give them no credit, and I believe that's the reason. Reason why a lot of Syracuse players, aside from what Carmelo Anthony, have never done anything on the next level, because I don't think they've taught any skills.
Yeah, there's no preparation, and I have no problem with teams playing in the zone as a compliment. But you're talking about producing players and improving your players. You got him, man. Or you said you see Syracuse players don't make good pros.
Right.
Except for Carmelo Anthony. Carmelo could have played over in Russia and he would have been an all-star. So I think he's an aberration.
Yeah, well, we know he was supremely talented. I think when you look around and that's one of my things, when you see college basketball, we of course know that because the one and done rule and kids can leave early, that basketball the talent base is low. But I'm thinking, like you said, you're a coach. What do you think can turn it around as far as not the pro people? Because obviously the pros are going to go pro. But I'm talking about the cats that don't go pro to improve their fundamentals. What do you think needs to They have.
I'll take it back. I'm involved in the grassroots of it now, in the middle schools, elementary, and high schools. And the NBA game is watered down. I think partly because of the one and done rule, because that time to mature in your third year of college is invaluable in the things that you learn. But because of the way the system works, they're telling you now if you go to college for 4 years, you're not a good player. Now, I think that's totally wrong. I think what happens is those kids mature, but these kids nowadays aren't being taught the fundamentals at an early age. And it just perpetuates all the way through until you get to pro basketball, or if you don't make pro, through college basketball. And that's why the game is watered down. Nobody's teaching the fundamentals anymore. Everybody wants to do crossover, the N1 crossover, instead of learning how to do a true crossover like Tim Hardaway.
Right. Well, I know.
Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I know, especially, that's one of the reasons why Rucker Park and going back to New York, the reason why St. John's and none of the other New York schools have been good in a while, because they are all N1 players. And that doesn't translate to real basketball.
Here's the funny part, man. Bottom line is, I was coaching a kid last summer. And he did a move on the court, and I asked the kid, I said, what did you learn? Next? First of all, you shouldn't be doing on the basketball court. And the kid told me. He said, I learned it on NBA Live. He literally rolled on the ground on his butt and dribbled behind his back at the same time during the middle of the game.
What?
And I almost lost my mind.
You're saying that a kid did the roll over on his back and dribble the ball in the middle of a real game?
In the middle of a real summer league, a travel ball game, and I almost lost my mind. And at first I thought he had said it, but then I realized he didn't fall. He was doing it for no purpose.
Wow.
And me being an old school, old head, I almost lost my mind. I told you, you can't do that in a real game. But he's the same kid that can dribble and do that stuff, but couldn't throw a two-hand chest pass to a wide-open player.
Well, that's
what we're dealing with.
Yeah, well, speaking of that, my personal opinion, I think you're 20 years too early. I honestly believe that. Now, seriously, if you was coming out right now with your game, they'd be talking about you in the same way they talk about John Wall, because you're a true point guard. I think what hurt you.
I appreciate that.
No, I'm serious. I think what hurt you was the fact that you came up in a time where everybody was glamorizing the scoring point guard. You know, people were looking at Isaiah in the crossovers and all that and the scoring, but never looking at the fact that he averaged 10 assists a game. And so. Yeah,
I agree, because I tell people when people ask me, they say, well, Mark, shoot. I say, yeah, I could shoot. I didn't. My game was so eerily similar to Avery Johnson, and I think I was a better shooter than Avery. But Avery came along, I think, 3 years later, and he stuck with it. And I just wish I would have had that commitment to stick with it the way he did. But I appreciate what I've gone through with terms of basketball, though. I wouldn't change it for the world.
Oh, no. Like I said, I think that it was a perception that people thought that was the way it should have been played, as opposed to, like, you with the rule changes and all this other stuff. I honestly think that point guards are very, very important now. They're not more talented now. It's just people are understanding that, point guards are supposed to pass.
Well, here's the big one now. Why the point guards, to me, are really shining. They changed the rules. There's no hand-checking anymore.
Right.
I had the pleasure of playing against one of the greatest defenders in the history of the NBA, Derek Harper. And Derek Harper had the strongest hands of any player I've ever seen in my life. And you couldn't get up to the court because he would put up a ice grip on you. And nowadays, you can't touch point guard.
Right.
And I think some of these point guards are really, really good, like Chris Paul, Darren Williams, really good players. But some of these guys will struggle if they play in the early 90s because of the hand-checking.
Yeah, I look at it, a guy who would struggle. I see a Steve Nash would struggle. Because I don't see him as strong enough. I think a couple of cats would be able to translate, because I think Darren Williams would be able, because he's a big point guard. I think the small point guards would have a problem.
Well, if you go back to Steve Nash's early career, prior to changing the rules, he struggled. And I think he's a grand slam. I have nothing but admiration for Steve Nash. But he struggled in the first couple of years of his career. Russell was playing behind people. But he struggled because of the physicality.
Right.
When they changed the rules, it allowed him total freedom to run around the court.
Right.
He's a phenomenal, one of the best passers I've ever seen.
Oh, no, no doubt. I mean, as point guard goes, you know, he's great vision. But, yeah, that's exactly when the rule changed, Steve Nash became a great point guard.
Yeah.
So, let's focus back on now your coaching. Where are you coaching out of? What's the season like? Are you in the middle of coaching now? And talk about your sports management.
Well, I'm just not getting ready to start our travel ball season, but I'm in the process of hopefully next fall being back in college basketball. But this summer, this spring and summer, we'll be focused on our travel ball team. Like I said, we probably have the top AAU team in California. And I think in about 4 weeks, we start our travel ball season with a Nike-sponsored team. That will be my main focus for the next 4 or 5 months. But during the summer, I'm going to try to get back into college basketball.
Okay. So there are any offers out there for you in college basketball?
Not at the present time, but I think as the NCAA tournament gets started, there's a bunch of job changes. Like I just heard that there's a bunch of changes at USC yesterday, so I'm going to be putting my name out there as the feeler and see what kind of input I get back. But I definitely want to get back into college basketball in the fall, if not pro basketball.
All right. Now, you know, of course, the tournament is coming up here. I don't know if you've been watching it. I'm going to ask you, who are your favorites and who are your dark horses?
Well, the favorites are the ones that everybody thinks. I think that's a great team. I think they're too young to win. Kansas is probably the most ready, better leadership at the point guard. The team that disappointed me the most is the point guard is a friend of mine, Larry Drew, in North Carolina. I don't know what happened to them, but it looks like the wheel fell off.
I can tell you that happened.
Yeah, I'm hurt by the way they played the last 2 months.
Yeah, they're too young. I mean, you can't lose all that leadership and not fall off. I mean, they're young at guard. You know, you can be young and big man, but you can't be young at guard unless the guard is extra special.
Well, this is what makes me question the McDonald's thing. Cause I know they're young, but when you got eight McDonald's All-Americans on your squad, you're supposed to be halfway decent. And they actually played well the first half of the season, and it looked like the wheels fell off. But I think this might be a year that we have a mid-major accidentally in the tournament.
Hey, my sleeper team, not homering for Indiana. That, I mean, of course, it was going to be Purdue, but when Robbie Hummel got hurt.
Robbie Hummel. Yeah, Robbie Hummel didn't get hurt. I wouldn't even call them a sleeper. I would think they're one of the top 16 in the country with Robbie Hummel.
Right. Well, I think Butler, depending on the draw, I think Butler could do some damage.
Well, I'll give you another name. I don't know why they haven't won it yet or at least got to the finals, is Gonzaga. I've watched them throughout the year. They're talented from top to bottom as good as anybody in the country, but they're missing that dog. They're missing a little when they get to the big, big teams, and I don't know why, but talent-wise, they can win it.
Yeah, my opinion on Gonzaga is that they don't have a dog there. They don't have that guy that you know, is like, I'm going to drop this elbow on you. They don't have that mentality.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think we talk about the same thing, that dog, that little extra fight in you that you got to have to be a champion. But talent-wise, like I said, they're deep 1-8. Who's another team that's going to beat it just because his coaching style and the way they play is just like a well-oiled machine, and that's Michigan State. It's Tom Izzo. I think when it's all said and done, the way they play physically and rebound, they'll be there again when it's all said and done.
Yeah, if they don't run into a team that can shoot, I look at it like if they run into a team with some good guards and decent post play, they can be out in the second round.
This one might be one of the most wide open. I think as good as Kentucky is on a neutral court, I don't think they shoot well enough to consider them a just a favorite.
Oh, no. Oh, hold on a second, Mark. We have a call.
Okay.
Caller, you're on the air. Welcome to Smooth Drama. You got any questions? Caller?
Hello?
Hello. Welcome to Smooth Drama. You're on the phone with Mark Wade and Dick Hugger. How you doing? You're not talking to me,
are you, Freddie?
Yeah, this is Dick Hugger.
Oh my God. This is Maureen, and really, I really just was trying to figure out how to listen to you guys on my internet. I'm just trying to cue into your show here and get some more knowledge about the basketball, but
okay.
I'm not technology enough advanced to know how to do this on the internet. So I saw this connection line here to call in, and I'm sorry I don't have any professional questions for you. I'm just trying to figure out how to listen to you online here.
Okay. All right. Well, what I'll do, we'll just put you on hold, and you should be able to hear it, okay?
All right. Thank you, love.
All right. Anyway, back to basketball. Now, Syracuse, a lot of people think Syracuse is a good team. I personally don't think that they'll get the Sweet 16 if they run to a team.
I don't either. And again, I don't like the zones, and I think if you're a decent, well-coached team with decent shooters, you'll get in the game against Syracuse. They do it bad both times against Louisville, and I think Louisville is a marginal team at best.
Yeah, I've
never been a Syracuse fan.
Yeah, I think they're mediocre. Actually, hard play is not very good. Aside from Routon, I don't think anybody else on that team is really that good.
If Robin can shoot through the circle and have a great 3 weeks, they become a really good team. But if he can't score like he did Saturday against Louisville, they become mediocre big time.
Right. Yeah.
I think the other kid Johnson, number four, he's not as good as they said he was. You know, they pumped him up and he was a transfer. He had a great early part of the season, but he doesn't want that spotlight.
He's the next player. He reminds me of Austin Day. He has the talent, but I don't think he has the mentality.
That's the key one right there.
Now, one of our bloggers asked the question about what happened at UCR.
Yes. I hate to get into it deeply, but I did commit a crime. And it wasn't what people think, but I did commit a crime, and I'm paying the price for it, and that's why I'm out of coaching now. But there's more to the story than people put in the paper, and that's why to the day I die, I will never fully believe what I see written in the paper, but I did commit a crime.
Okay. All right. Enough said. Enough there. And maybe one day you'll want to expound on it and clear the air and clear the record.
Yeah, you and I one day, I don't think today is the day, but yeah, definitely one day. I have nothing to hide. It's public knowledge, public record. But there's more to the story than people have left around it.
All right. Now, once again, getting back to basketball. On the West Coast, I know about Gonzaga, but do you see any other team out west making any kind of headway in the tournament?
I'm hoping that Washington can sneak in if they don't win the Pac-10 tournament, but I just don't think there's enough talent in any of the West Coast schools other than Gonzaga that can really do damage. Cal's pretty good, but not enough inside to test, I think, go far. You know, I think their guard, Jerome Randall, probably one of the top three or four point guards in the country. But overall, they're not physical enough. And I think when they play an East Coast team, I think most of the West Coast teams don't have enough inside beef to make a dent to get deep in the tournament.
Now, I watched St. Mary's last night. They have big men, but I don't know. I don't think their guard play is good enough to, even though they have have the big men that guard, but okay. And the same thing if San Diego State makes it. They're a team that looks like they can win a couple of games, but I don't know.
Well, I've had an opportunity. I was actually at San Diego State about 3 weeks ago at the practice. Their biggest problem is their point guard is really a two guard. And if he can be pushed over to the two, they could do damage. But they're going to be hurt by a team that picks up and presses them. But I'll tell you the sleeper, too, we haven't talked about is the University of New Mexico.
Now, there are no sleepers. Steve Alford he's a damn good coach. And obviously, I started off the show talking about him, and I know you know him well.
Too well.
But, yeah, they have an underrated team, and, I mean, they have inside and outside play.
Their star player, who I think is one of the top 10 players in the country, his father went to UNLV with me, the kid Darrington Hoffman.
Okay.
His father played football when I was at UNLV, and I think that kid is a pro, and he has what we talk about. He has that dog in him to want to be a leader and want to get to the next level. So I think I would watch out for New Mexico because he could literally put them on his back, and they could ride him to a championship.
Well, you know what's funny is, speaking of New Mexico, I'm going to assume they're going to be out west and maybe a 2 or 3 seed, maybe. I don't know for sure. But, you know, they're talking about bringing Syracuse out here. And I'm thinking.
Can I,
huh?
Go ahead.
Yeah, they were thinking about bringing Syracuse because they said they can't play out in the Carrier Dome, which is, of course, a site. They put them out here in the west. I could see Gonzaga, who is a good shooting team that has decent guard play, or especially if New Mexico, I think they can do it. But I'm a conspiracy theorist. I think they're going to do what they did last year.
I know the other team I heard, the other team they're talking about bringing out here, if they still are number one seed, and I don't know if they are because they got beat, they might get beat in the tournament, is Kansas State. That would be a tougher draw for Gonzaga then. If Syracuse came out here, I think Syracuse could get beat by Gonzaga if they're in the same region.
Yeah, well, Kansas State is my other sleeper team to make the Final Four because they got inside play and they have strong guard play. Both their guards can shoot.
Their guards might be the best backcourt in the nation.
Yeah.
When they're playing at their best, they're scary to deal with.
Yeah, it's just for some reason they can't play Kansas. So if they can just get them to play for Kansas, I think they'll be fine.
Well, that's like playing against your big brother. It's hard to beat your big brother until you wake up one day and realize you're better than him.
Yeah. Now, I got another team that I think is a sleeper also that I've seen like 3 times this year, Baylor.
Oh, no. Me and Coach Drew, I talked to Coach Drew all fall because he's trying to recruit one of our kids, Gary Franklin, from Modern Day. I think Baylor can win it. I don't think they're a sleeper.
Yeah, I'm talking
about I love it. Yeah.
Get to the final type.
Yes. you have my vote on that one.
Yeah, they're a damn good team.
Yeah.
And, well, now – We were talking about college basketball, and we talked about Kentucky earlier. Now, you know, there's the John Wall debate, and the player that I don't think is really getting enough play, Evan Turner, Ohio State.
Evan Turner he's a monster. He's pro ready because he can do so many things, and he's a big guard.
Right. I mean,
he's definitely. I don't think either one of those kids are player of the year though.
Who do you think is player of the year?
There's a couple other kids. In my eyes, and I know he won't get a plug for player of the year. I think he's as good as Evan Turner. He's Darrington Hoffman from New Mexico, and he won't get the look. Mexico's not top 5.
Oh well, I mean, we understand that. I mean, there's no mid major. Team gonna have a guy player of the year unless you put a ridiculous like David Robinson did for Navy.
Yeah.
You know, I've
scary part is if you look at his numbers, I think he's the only kid in the nation to lead a team in scoring, rebounding, assists, and block shots.
Well, that would be Evan.
And Mikey Steele, too.
Well, that's Evan.
Evan Turner's right up there with him. But I think Darrington, he's got the same thing that Evan Turner has. Coach, he's 2 inches taller.
Yeah.
And I just love the kid. I think he might be a lottery pick.
Oh no, I've read that he's a lottery pick, and I've only seen Mexico on the highlights, so I can't say that I've seen him play. I mean, but I know it's a Steve Alford team, so I know how he coaches and how he approaches it. So they're gonna be school fundamentally, and they're gonna play tough. And you know, I can't say I expect him because what could happen. Like what happens to a lot of these schools, they're going to put them in against the toughest touches. You know, I think that was the conspiracy last year with the NCAA tournament. All the mid-majors played each other, and they didn't get the chance to play against the major conferences. And I think that hurt a lot of them. And I think this year, for sure, New Mexico can show up in the final if they got the right draw, or Gonzaga, for that matter.
So it's a hard one for me for the actually pick a player of the year. Cause I like John Wallman, but I think, and I've seen John Wall for the last 2 years because of what I do, I just think they hype these kids up. I think Kentucky, if they really want to win a championship, that ball has to go inside. They're two big guys, the freshman and the senior. Those two kids have to, they go inside now, Kentucky can win.
I don't believe it.
I actually think
that their big man is overrated. I see that dude as the next coming of Benoit Benjamin, but that just me. Maybe he'll prove me wrong.
No, I agree with you. But I don't think he's their best big man. What bothered me is they basically give that kid the mantle when the other kid is actually the senior is better. That kid came back for a reason, and it bothers me that they're not featuring him. That kid is a dominant big man.
Right. Yeah, I mean. And
I didn't think of the first name.
Right. We're talking about Patterson.
Patterson.
Yeah.
It bothers me that they don't feature him over the freshman. So I think the freshman has potential to blow up and be a Benoit Benjamin without a doubt, be drafted high and not do a thing in the NBA.
Oh, no. I mean, because I look at his game like he's not overly athletic, first and foremost. So he's 6'11", 270. All that stuff that he's doing now is getting, you know, it's not going to work. He's average athletically, and yeah, his attitude. I don't see him going far. I see him as the bust of the draft before it even starts.
And that's what scares me about DeMarcus Cousins is his attitude. Because I've seen him on a couple television games get into a referee, get a technical, and then not even listen to his coaches, Rod Strickland or Cal Lafari when he came to the sideline. And I just think that's unbelievable, but. It's a direct reflection of the AAU system where these kids don't realize there's rules.
Well, I mean, but that goes back to what you said about them not featuring the senior. He's supposed to be living off the scraps of the senior, not vice versa.
Here it is right here. I actually got the stats up on here print. Now, DeMarcus Cousins has played 400 less minutes than Patterson, but he's taken 5 more shots.
Yeah. I mean,
that to me is unbelievable. 400 less minutes for 500, but 5 more shots.
Well, I think that's a testimony to, like you said, the AAU and also Calipari Calstone to a freshman. When actually Patterson was a 50% shooter his whole career, and now he's looking out by the 3-point line because he has to cede his position to this guy. I'm not a fan of it.
It's going to be interesting. I think there's another player. I don't know who the SEC player of the year is going to be, but I like the little kid in South Carolina, Devin Downs.
Yeah, I mean he's okay. I like the point guard down in Vanderbilt, Beal. Also, he's a good player. You know, he plays and he can shoot. But the SEC is really down this year. You know, they're not really. I've seen Florida and Tennessee and all of them, and I think the right matchup, they're gone in the first round.
Well, definitely when they come out with the bracket, I like to sit down and talk again when they come out with the bracket.
Yeah. Oh, hey, you know, you can come back next week. No problem. You know, I want to talk the brackets. I mean, I want to go through every bracket. So, you know, you got open invitation to call anytime, man. Now, for people out there listening, if you who got a son that wants to be trained to play basketball, where can they reach you at?
They can reach me at Freeze, FREE, MESports.org. FreeTobeMESports.org. Email me and I will email you back, but I'm in the Los Angeles area. And we do workouts, and I actually work with a guy named Joey Johnson. His brother Dennis played with the Boston Celtics. And he has two of the top, well, his 11th grade son is one of the top 11th graders in the country. And I think John Calipari came in to recruit him a couple weeks ago. He's got a family prep in Las Vegas.
Now, just real quick, I wanted to ask you. Now, do they approach you like condescendingly? I mean, people kissing your ass because you're coaching these talented kids. I mean, how do they approach you?
Some of them do, but I really don't care about the term elite and the talented kids. I'm trying to be realistic, man. People be realistic when they deal with me that, you know, I can't tell you if you're going to be a pro, and I can't tell you I'm going to get your kid a scholarship. But what I tell the parents is this: one, your kid will become disciplined and understand how to work out and understand their game.
Okay.
And that's the bigger thing, right, is getting the kid to understand, you know, it's cool to want to make the NBA, but even as a player, I never dreamed I was going to make the NBA here. I played it because I love basketball, and the end result was I got an opportunity through my work ethic to have an opportunity to play in the NBA.
Well, all I know is this, in closing on this, I remember admiring your game because, you know, you was a real point guard, and I always appreciated real point guards, and my homie G always hated you because you wasn't flashing, you always made the right pass, you know, because we was all big UNLV fans. You know, back then, it was only UNLV and Georgetown, the teams you could, like, really root for their style of play. I mean, I'm an Indiana guy, so I watched the Hoosiers, too, because I actually liked the way they played also, the structure. I want to give you them props, and I'm glad to see that you're doing things at the grassroots level and trying to right the wrongs that's going on in basketball right now.
Yeah, Fred, honestly, a couple of things before we go. What I did was a blessing because it brought me back to the grassroots home. It gave me an opportunity to reassess what I wanted out of the thing, so I wouldn't change it. And as far as Indiana goes, honestly, I wish I could have played for Bobby Knight because I like that discipline, and I also like I'm confrontational. And him getting in my face would have made me more disciplined in so many different areas.
Okay. Well, I mean, but see, that's the beauty of it now. Now you get to take those lessons that you learned and put them in the real and practical use.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's the fun part of it.
Yeah.
And here's the one thing from my career, Fred, that I take and I appreciate. When I had the 18 assists against Indiana in the Final Four game, I tell people and I ask people, how many turnovers do you think I had? And I get all kind of crazy numbers. At the end of the day, I had no turnovers.
Yeah,
that's the part. Yeah, that's the part I appreciate about what I did, the guys I played with.
Yeah, I'm well aware of it, man. I was like, damn, they still in the game? When Freddie Banks was not missed, I'm like, come on, stop it. But
yeah, that's my.
Now go ahead.
Nelson. I was just with Freddie last week, and he asked me to be the presenter. He just got inducted into the Southern Nevada Hall of Fame, and he asked me to be his presenter, so that's going to be a fun event in June.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, the bracket's coming out this week. Matter of fact, we gonna set up a smooth drama of NCAA bracket tournament for anybody who wants to be involved. Hopefully you'll be involved in it and we can go up against each other and maybe get you to come back next week before the game start and we can talk basketball again.
Oh, definitely. That'd be my pleasure. You know how we do.
All right. Well,
okay.
Again, Mark Wade, UNLV basketball, the greatest point guard season ever. Not Jason Kidd, not Steve Nash, not Magic Johnson. Mark Wade. Thank you, bro.
Appreciate it, brother. Thank you very much.
All right.
All right. Talk to you next week.
Okay.
Bye-bye.
Bye. Woo! All right. That was Mark Wade. Basketball. We're going to come back on some basketball stuff next week, y'all. If you cut me right now, some basketball and, you know, probably some hip-hop will fall out of my veins. Anyway, NCAA tournament is coming. Can y'all feel it in the air? Anybody? Can y'all feel anything? Oh man. Yeah, this is gonna be a good year this year. We're gonna get past it, the good stuff. We're gonna talk about my disappointment today. Come to find out that Pringles is, you know, they had to recall Pringles. Now, I don't know about y'all. I like Pringles. I'm sure there's some more people out there who like Pringles also. Pringles potato chips, they had to recall their cheeseburger potato crisp and family fave taco night potato crisp because they have hydrolyzed vegetable protein. And I guess they were finding that it had some salmonella in those ingredients in the processing plant in Tennessee, which was sent out all over the United States and is based in Las Vegas, Nevada. So for those of you eating Pringles, if you're eating the cheeseburger potato crisps or the family fave taco night potato crisps, put them down. But also, the hydrolyzed vegetable protein is actually ingredients in all of the Pringles, unfortunately. So, you know, we talk about being health conscious, whatnot. You might want to watch what you're eating. And I know we're talking about saving and not eating and sacrificing and whatnot, but you know, these kind of things, I mean, one of the things that is known to cause is diabetes and whatnot over a long term eating. Just watch what you eat. I know it's hard because of all the preservatives, but please watch what you eating because, you know, at the end of the day, it's about quality of life. So my hater of the night is Pringles. I hate y'all for ruining good chips for me. I like Pringles, and now I got to give y'all up. So I'm sad. No more Pringles for me. You know, on that note, I want to thank Black Steel for coming on co-hosting with me. I want to thank my man Mark Wade, and we'll be back. Same bat time, same smooth late. Dick Hugger, come out. Peace.
Peace. He is the host with the most, and he's rocking coast to coast smooth. She is the lady with her hands.
Where in the hell did you get your news from?
Drama.
Together you guys
smooth.
Drama.